Hey Patrick, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to ask you a couple of rapid fire questions. The
Sure.
first one I have is, why do you think the lobbying profession is misunderstood?
I think that most people are introduced to lobbyists through film, television, rumors, things like that, as opposed to the reality of being in a state legislature or a local government and seeing how they actually operate to help folks make decisions based on industries that they don't necessarily work in or have any expertise in. So while there is definitely the kinds of lobbyist you'll see on TV and film, it's a very small percentage of them. The rest are a sea of folks trying to explain incredibly boring, detailed concepts to folks that are in power and totally uninterested, but have to because legislation affects just about every corner of business.
And if you had to describe lobbying in one sentence, how would you describe it?
Trying to distill very complicated information to folks that have no real expertise in it. That would be its most basic form. And then on a higher level, to people that maybe do have some expertise in it, but don't necessarily have the time dedicated to see some of the pitfalls, problems, or unforeseen consequences of legislation or lack of legislation.
So, if you had the opportunity to be the governor, what would you do?
Oh, it'd make it like so much more illegal to not use your turn signals. I think that's like the first place I'll go straight at the voters. I mean, I've got a lot of opinions. I don't know that my personal agenda is necessarily the most important because I've spent a lot of my career helping other organizations get their message across or their legislation and their priorities moving forward. My priorities as both a an government affairs professional and a comedian might not be well suited for the person in charge of an entire state.
Okay. If you had to change one rule in the state government process, what would you change?
Oh, that's a great question. I would think during public comments there should be a court jester nearby. I think that we've got to keep some of this light. It gets really heavy, it gets really dark, it can be very problematic. I think a palate cleanser while we're talking about these things would help calmer heads prevail. It's a little wild, but that'd be my recommendation.
Good concept. Why do you think the youth has to be more involved in government relations? How would you encourage them to be?
Well, because I think that one is going to affect them drastically. I think most youthful people don't recognize the impact government has on their lives, or specifically local government has on their lives until much later. So if you can get ahead of that, especially when you have the time, resources, and gumption as a young person to get involved, I think that that's a really important part of it. It's hard for somebody like me, starting to have kids and a family, to be able to stay super late at night for a city council meeting or some other legislative project. But in my 20s and early 30s, that was something I did have the time, resources, and dopamine and serotonin to actually to have an effect on. And so I would really push for folks that have an actual interest in it to get more involved. But at the same time, I try not to push people, I try not to force people into this kind of thing. If politics is not your thing, if that's not of real interest to you, I don't want you going in there with very thin understanding or opinions. You know, to just stick to whatever your hobby is, that's fine. But if you do have an inclination towards it, I would definitely encourage it.
I usually do this before the podcast begins, and I forgot to ask you, but could you just introduce yourself and tell us a quick bio about yourself?
Sure. My name is Patrick Arnold. I am CEO of Arnold Group, public policy and political consulting firm. Previously, I served as the CEO of the Charleston Home Builders Association. Before that, I was the government affairs director for the Charleston Trident Association of Realtors. For that, I ran the national consulting firm Push Digital, doing races all across the country. Before that, I was a hired gun for campaigns and elections for many years. And I got my start working with Governor Bobby Jindal and his campaign in Louisiana, where I'm from. I am, I'm born and raised in Cajun country. I don't have an accent. This isn't a witness protection program cover story. My mother was an English teacher. So I know there's some suspicion there. I like to say I'm a highly, highly distilled swamp trash. I just speak well. But I try and bring that kind of fun energy of Cajun culture everywhere I go. I realize now that I'm shamelessly wearing the outfit of James Carville. So I'm kind of a little mortified that I'm ripping another political consultant off. But yeah, that's my background, kind of my short bio.
Nice. And can you tell us, like, when you got into this field of government relations, was there any specific skill you had to develop over time?
Yeah, my entry into politics is a little different than most. So I was in undergrad as a construction management, industrial engineering student. I was building houses post-Katrina in Baton Rouge from the migration of folks that came from New Orleans. I had a crawfish restaurant I was doing at the same time I was in school. I was doing a whole lot of things that had nothing to do with politics. And funny enough, I ran into a friend of mine, an old friend of mine from Cajun country. I'm going to name drop him. Danny Russell. He's an attorney in Baton Rouge. And he asked me what I was doing, and I told him I was building houses and everything else, and I was pretty miserable. And he said, well, why don't you come work on this campaign? It's going to be a lot of fun. And I just blindly accepted it. And, 5 months later, I'm working in the governor's office. So this is, and that was Governor Bobby Jindal. And it really helped me, coming from this engineering background and this project management background, that when I started working on the campaigns, I quickly saw structurally how campaigns and operations were working a little differently than they did, just because of the way that you have to go about building things and scheduling them out. And I saw a lot of inefficiencies that really served me well in campaign work, because I was just kind of coming from a different background and angle. So I would say back then, you did not see the standardization of a campaign process the way that you see it now. So it served me very well in my early years that I could kind of just look at a campaign as a whole and be able to put all the components together. And in fact, I did that for some of my earliest races, was put it all in project management software like it was a construction engineering project, and crash the schedule to see how much faster and cheaper I could do a campaign than what everybody was kind of anecdotally telling me how you ran a campaign. And that really helped me lock in a lot of clients because they didn't see me as, you know, a failed pre-law student who didn't make it in law school looking for a career in politics. I was kind of this slight outsider with this engineering degree, even though it was one of the easiest engineering degrees I could have gotten. So I tell a lot of folks getting into politics that, like, you don't have to necessarily have this specific background. In fact, a tilt shift perspective can often lead you to doing some really cool things in a campaign or public policy organization that they may not think of because of where they come from.
I did notice that you have a hobby or passion towards stand-up comedy as well. So can you tell us a little bit as how did that begin? And then, you know, where can people find you?
Oh gosh. I do not publish anything online. I don't, if you want to see it, you got to wait for a showcase show or something in Charleston. I do it a lot, less, frequently now that I've had kids, but, I got my start doing that, when, you know, in college, I played around with comedy a bit, but it wasn't until the 2012 campaign cycle. I had run we had like 30 something races going through the firm. And I completely burned out in 1 year. After years of doing these campaigns, this is the one that broke me. And so I left the firm, and it's a good buddy of mine, left on good terms. And that next year, I just did stand-up. I learned how to do stand-up comedy for a year. I'm going to give a shout-out to comedian Dusty Slay, who came out of Charleston. Everybody go see his stuff. He really helped me learn how to do stand-up comedy. And, I mean, I just did that for an entire year. And it served me really well going forward. I was already doing a lot of public speaking anyway, but this kind of married the public speaking with actually having something interesting to say, or keeping people's attention at 8 o'clock in the morning at a political conference. You know, I say my shtick can sometimes be the depressed weatherman. I know I'm telling you a dark joke, but I'm telling you with this, now we're doing Cincinnati. And so anyway, I'll have some dates up, hopefully going into the fall, for folks to check it out. But I will, but most of my act is not political at all. I shoehorn that into when I'm doing my public speaking and teaching people about government affairs or political consulting, conferences and that sort of thing.
That's really cool and awesome. What is the best advice you ever received?
Oh, well, you know, it's a tough one. I gotta say, it sounds a little cliche, but stay true to who you are. Know that your personality, who you are and what you believe in and your things that make you unique as a person can be healthily incorporated into your professional life, into your work life. Like, it's nothing wrong with me telling jokes and being funny at work as long as they're appropriate things to say. You don't have to force yourself to be just like what you see ahead of you. Don't think that, like, if you want to be a lobbyist, I have to buy the same suit as that lobbyist. I gotta walk, talk, and act and chew gum like him or her. You don't have to do that. You can be who you are, so long as you're being professional. You're providing a quality job, and you're always looking to learn and not afraid to admit that you don't know something, because you have the intention to learn and figure out how to do something. I think that all too often people feel like they have to fake it till they make it in the wrong way. I say fake it by getting into the room, all right? But you don't have to. You don't have to emulate somebody else. You got to grow yourself, or else you're gonna wake up in your 30s and 40s and be like, "Who am I?" Mm-hmm. Nobody needs that existential crisis once your career finally gets going.
Good point. Good advice. How would you describe yourself in one word?
It would be shameless for me to say funny.
you can go ahead and say, yeah.
I would say genuine to a fault.
Nice.
But that's not one word. But so I like breaking. Rule breaker. It's also not a word.
Nice. Who was the most famous person you met?
The most famous person I met. Oh, man, that's a great question. I want to say Ric Flair.
From the wrestling.
Yeah, wrestler Ric Flair, met him at an airport. Had a drink with him. That was cool. Yeah. You know, it's tough because I'm not really a big starstruck guy. I've met tons and tons of people because I've lived on the road. That's a really funny thing. You actually do meet a lot of athletes and like wrestlers, entertainers, things like that. If you spend too much time in the airport, mm-hmm. you can kind of spot it. So yeah, I'm just gonna go with Ric Flair. I think that one's probably one I'm most proud of.
Nice. So if you had like all the money in the world, what would you do with it?
Oh, petty revenge. I would get back at everybody that wronged me all the way down to like, you know, kindergarten.
Wow, you might be already. You must probably have a list ready. I get to go.
Yeah. It's like on Billy Madison. I've got the list that I'm crossing out. I make this joke because this guy's like literally one of my best friends growing up. This guy Garrett, he would play Nintendo and tell me that the other controller didn't work, so that I just had to watch him play because he didn't want me to slow him down. So he wouldn't let me play Nintendo with him. So I would buy his childhood home and have a live feed of me playing his Nintendo alone in his childhood home, in his room, just to annoy him. I would do things like that. I would probably start a foundation to do some good, but that good would probably be petty revenge too. It'd be a foundation for petty revenge.
Oh my God, okay. So the next question, you threw me off here with that answer. So
sorry, I couldn't help it. That's actually, yeah. It's a bit, so I got to use it.
The next question I have for you is, so if you had the time capsule to go back in time and to any era, which era would you pick?
Go back in time. That's interesting. I genuinely think I would have gone back to now. I'd love some context. Am I going back as an adult, or am I just like zipping back to? Because I would pick the 90s.
Okay.
Because the 90s were when I was growing up as a young kid, and I think that I had an idea of like what that was like around me, and I know that probably wasn't an accurate perspective because of my youth, because I was a child growing up in that. So I would go back just that far, just to the 90s, so that I could see the difference between what my perspective is now and what things were like back then, and how that probably had an influence on me or people. So if that helps me understand, I think that would help me understand how people change over time in modern time, more than, you know, if I could go annoy, I don't know, let's say founding fathers at cocktail parties. You know, I think I would get more out of going back to the 90s. Plus, I would know what to wear. So,
interesting perspective. And what is the most favorite issue you worked on, policy or issue?
You know, it was kind of accidental. Working on affordable housing and homelessness advocacy policy, those were things that were pretty much put on my plate when I started working for the Realtors Association, that I had no real expertise up until that point on. It just wasn't really on my radar. And I learned so much about how policy programs and things can drastically change outcomes in people and lives, and how you can actually watch it in real time with a municipality or something. It's very tangible. So, and I think that one really broke my brain to find out things like, there's no way for somebody to get healthy without the stability of a bed in place every night. You can't get on medication, you can't see doctors, you can't have clothes for work, you can't, there's all these dominoes of getting people in a better place that just start with a roof. And so I guess I had a very passive understanding of that before, and it really changed the way I look at people in public policy after working on that one.
And do you get to like meet people like you know, actual people to discuss what their issues are before you go and present it to the legislators who have these problems? Okay.
Yes, but I will say, and this is a good clarification for your podcast about me as a guest, technically, I am not a lobbyist. I am not a local public policy advocate, and that has to do with South Carolina law. With you don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're doing local public policy work. You do if you are being paid to advocate at the state legislative level, and for which it differs from some of our neighboring states. With my career, I've been working with trade associations such as the Realtors and Home Builders, who we have our local organization that is in charge of our territory doing this kind of advocacy. And then we have our partners at the state association that we work with, but it's more like we pass the baton for them to, and their lobbyist for the state to bring it to them. And so my job is to work with these committees, these task force, these commissions, any of these things where I get to meet these people at the ground level in the community, get that input and bring it to lobbyists. And a lot of times those lobbyists are with me in order for state legislation. Now for local legislation, I mean, I'm big on having first person accounts, stories, and things I can bring to people. Like we were working on short-term rental regulations when they were first popping up in Charleston's market. And it was hard for people to wrap their heads around, like, why should we allow this industry to grow? And the best case that I could find was being able to meet somebody, Rajonda, who explained to me, like, this is her way of keeping her family's home that's been in the family for generations, is by having some supplemental income that could do this. And my argument really falls flat if it's not genuine and it doesn't come with a genuine interaction with the people that this kind of legislation and legislation affects.
And is housing the primary, policy which you currently are passionate about? What is your passion in terms of the legislation?
Because of my work with those two trade associations, I became I hit my 10,000 hours in housing public policy. And so I'm running with it. I like it. It's kind of serendipitous that I did, I was building houses and I got an engineering degree, and then I did campaigns for almost 10 years. And then when I switched over to doing trade association work, that it happened to be in housing. So
Okay.
it was kind of awkward when working for the home builders, that folks would talk to me about, especially the builders and members like that, about building a house as if I really remembered it or was doing it for a long time. So it was a lot of, that's why we use those 2x4s, and I'm just sitting here thinking about the 2 years that I was building houses, and like, I don't remember a lot of that, but I do know a lot about regulations of zoning and codes and things that can really help or hurt an industry.
I know, like we've gone like back and forth in terms of your past and your existing career. Is there any other advice you'd like to share? Any types of wisdom you'd like to share from the experiences you've had?
I would say get past your imposter syndrome. And that will be advice that is good for you when you're young, and it'll probably be good advice for you when you're older. Very few people actually get past the idea that everybody's pretending to know more than they do. Everybody looks like they have it more together than they do. It's okay. You just gotta jump in. You gotta be willing and eager to learn, and don't buy into the idea that everybody's smarter than you, everybody's ahead of you in your career, and they're gonna find out that you're a fraud, or that you were actually a C student and not an A student like the rest of them. They're all C students too, or they're C students in life. There's so much wasted energy in that anxiety and that hang up that can be focused on, learning, being a good, decent human being to work with. Because I mean, that is half of being successful in politics, is being a competent, enjoyable, reasonable person, day in, day out, not being so caught up in your head and worrying about these things. If you lose a battle, you lose a fight, if legislation goes down, that's okay. Real lobbyists and public policy experts know that there's going to be another project after that, and one after that. The people that you're, quote, your enemies, they're probably going to be your friends that you have coffee or drink with to over time. And don't play into this zero-sum game and that you're a fraud. That's silly. We have too much work to do.
With that note, thanks so much, Patrick, especially for you being so authentic. And thanks for shedding a fresh perspective on lobbying. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the kind words.
And at some point, I'll probably come and watch your show as well.
I'd love to have you there. I might drag you on stage and interview you.
Oh, please don't do that. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Anytime.